Weekly, brought to you by Barfoot & Thompson. On the show today, we have the fabulous leadership coach Deb Bailey in to chat about how you can navigate your impact as a leader. Welcome to Property Matters. Welcome along to another Monday. We're into December if you are listening live. Have you got your Christmas shopping started? I've got a fabulous daughter in Melbourne that's messaging me her Christmas list that is growing by the second. But it is that time we can officially start getting ready for Christmas. Of course, if you're listening to our podcast at any time of the year, this makes absolutely no sense to you whatsoever, and that's okay. But of course, you can download our podcast from all your favourite podcast sites. Check us out on Apple, Samsung, iHeartRadio, YouTube, or wherever you like to get your podcasts. Now, absolutely delighted to welcome a new guest to the show today. It's the fabulous leadership coach, got that wrong in the intro, Deb Bailey. Welcome to the show, Deb.
Thank you. Nice to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you here. And look, when I looked at your CV list, you're a leadership coach, a facilitator, a speaker, and an author. Now, that's an impressive bio. Before we unpack all that, though, take us back. Tell us, you know, who is Deb? What's your career journey that led up to those credits? Because I bet that didn't happen overnight.
No, it did not happen overnight. So my career journey has been fabulous, I have to say. I've loved every minute of it. So I guess where I fell into the people and culture space when I was living in London, I lived there for about 5 years. And that I just really started working in the people, the training space. And I loved seeing how people could move from where they were to where they wanted to be and that it wasn't so hard for them. And so from there, I came back to New Zealand and was very fortunate in working with Fisher & Paykel Healthcare. Mm-hmm. You know, this is back in the days where they only had a couple of hundred people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, by the time I left, there was a lot of thousands of people working for that organisation. And I was there for 22 years.
Wow, that's a decent career stint.
Yeah, it was. And I think the thing was, you know, as a growing business, my role changed every 4 or 5 years as the business grew. So it was an amazing opportunity. Got to work with some incredible people all around the world. And then once I left there, you know, I sort of had one of those moments. Oh, what should I do when I grow up? I'd been there for so long. And I left there and I thought, actually, you know what? I might give my own thing a go. And so started my practice in 2018. And here we are.
That is so cool. That is so cool. So what does a typical week look like for you? If I'm thinking, you know, that mix between coaching, facilitating, speaking, writing books, is there a typical week? Or is that part of the fun, that it's never the same,
perhaps? Yeah, it can be part of the fun. What I do try to do, though, is practice what I preach, which is getting that life by design thing happening, if you can. So I try to have particular delivery days during the week where I could be doing any of those things that you talk about, mm-hmm. whether it's one-on-one coaching or training or speaking. And then I tend to sort of straddle the weekends with just in office time. So whether that's doing a bit more development work or writing perhaps, I mean, it doesn't always work out that way, but that's sort of the general idea. So, varied.
We'll talk a little bit later about your book, but I'm curious, do you have like a process for when you're writing? Like, is it lock yourself away? Or look, I had an author once that said they always got up at 5 a.m, had a hot spa, and then whatever came out after that had the spa, that was how they did it. Like, do you have your secret process that works for you?
Yes, I guess, most authors do have a particular process that works for them. Mine is, I've learnt, because this is my second book, so I learnt from my first one that for me, I need to also lock myself away. I need to have no other distractions. The place I write is really important. I can't write in my office. That's where I do work. Mm. So when I want to do creative stuff, I need to go to a different place. Yeah. And, you know, I just hunker down. I just keep going until I go, okay, the brain is fried for today. I've got everything out of it. I'll come back tomorrow.
Yeah, that's cool. Funny what you say about the place. In my time, I've written 5 full-scale musicals, and I've only ever written them on plane trips to the other side of the world.
Yeah, fascinating.
I can't can't sit down and concentrate here, but get on a plane at something like, I've got this deadline, there and back to complete it. Yeah. It's funny, eh?
Yeah,
we find what works for us. So what is it about the leadership journey and coaching that you love so much?
I think it comes back to that thing about seeing people move through and achieve things that maybe they didn't think were entirely possible. So I love seeing that in people. I think too, I've always held this belief that anything is possible. Anything is possible. It's just about deciding, committing, hunkering down and doing the work. And so I apply that thought process, if you like, to everything that I do, whether it's actually in my practice or even just in my life in general. So I guess from that perspective, you know, because I am a possibilities thinker, mm-hmm. I see that possibility in lots of people, and I'm happy to hold on to that belief for them until they're ready to kind of take it on for themselves. But yeah, people can do amazing things. They just have spent a lot of time sometimes telling themselves that they can't.
Yeah.
Mm.
Or someone else has, perhaps.
Or someone else has.
Yeah. Okay. Mm. So look, in today's high pressure world, what are you seeing in our current leaders that are making them stand out from the rest, or perhaps fall down and not show good leadership, you know, due to the pressures on them? I mean, we only have to look at media. You know, we're constantly talking about economic pressures here in New Zealand. We see it. We see it out there. I mean, you only have to walk through our city to see it.
Mm.
How does that translate into leadership? Are you seeing good and bad stuff out there?
Yeah, I think, you know, where we see good leadership or great leadership, what we see is a leader who knows that often their success is going to be through the success of their team, which has a very different energy to it, right?
Mm.
As opposed to a leader who's kind of maybe just, you know, pulling or leading from the front.
Mm.
And so I think where a leader is able to understand and connect with their people more, I use this phrase with all of my clients, which is, you know, what I'd like you to think about is ask more, tell less. And I think if we can apply that principle in our leadership, and we're the leader of a team, ask our team members more about the project, the challenges, the whatever it is, before you jump in with what you think is the solution. I think that is a challenge that a lot of our current leaders have, particularly emerging or first-time leaders. I think because, you know, they found themselves in this leadership role, they feel they have to have the answer to everything.
Mm.
That's why they've been chosen. And it's not the case at all. So it's how they will actually get the solutions through the people around them.
I love what you just said, that their success is through the success of their team.
Mm.
Now, I lead a team. I've got 18 in my team, but I'm guilty of getting busy in my own world, my own projects. What advice do you give then to make sure that you are finding time to get back to your team if that's such a key success point?
I think it's layered. I think the first thing for all leaders to realise is you're not going to do this on day one, right? You are not going to shift from perhaps being someone who delegates, for example, to team members by telling them what to do, by telling them how you would do it, and then sort of leaving it with them. And we see that's a pretty common approach to delegation, right?
Yeah.
Yet how many times do we then, when the deadline is a couple of days out, do we see leaders swooping back in?
Yeah.
It's not done the way they want or anything, so they whip it back off their people. So I think it's about, as a leader, connecting and knowing your people. I remember doing a workshop with a group of leaders down in Christchurch, and they were all telling me how they knew all of their people. It was fabulous. And I gave them this little exercise to do where they basically just, I said, awesome, you know, go through and complete this little sort of template document about what you know about your people. And after them, I think all of them were in that position of going, oh, I thought I knew them, but actually maybe I don't know the things that would really make me leading this person a lot easier. You know, what motivates them?
Yeah.
How do they like to be recognised? How do they like expectations set? All those types.
And how different every member of the team is. Don't have one set of rules for your full team, because everyone is going to be so different on that journey.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely. I love that. I love it. And leaders, you know, we're all humans. they've got their own lives going on before they even walk into work. What advice do you give to a leader on refocusing on their team no matter what's happening in their world? How do we leave our world at the door?
Yeah.
Can we truly do that?
I don't think we can. I'm not a proponent of that, I have to say. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my approach to leadership is a very holistic one. We are one person. So what's going on in our personal life, of course it's going to have an impact on what's going on in our professional world and vice versa. So I think, one of the keys is to get really clear on what is in your current world. How much of your, what I call finite resources, time, energy, focus, money, how much of that do those things consume? And are they the things that are really important to you? So career is generally a key component of most people's, what I would call your life plan, right? You've got all this stuff going on. And so it's making sure that, again, you're not trying to be all things to all people. You're not trying to do it all yourself. You understand the key things for each of your people, like we just talked about. And that you focus on the things that matter most. Everyone would probably say they've got a to-do list with 20, probably more, things on it, right? But not all of those things are important and maybe don't even need to be done. I love that little exercise of instead of creating a to-do list, you create a to-don't list. What am I not going to do? And just flip it on its head a little bit.
Okay. This is coming from the person who watched me go through my to-do list before we went on air today. Now I feel very conscious. What does leadership coaching look like? So describe a typical session or how you tailor it to suit a different leader's needs, because I imagine every leader's different.
Yes, absolutely. So, interestingly, my first book is it's called Inside Out, Why Leadership Starts With You. And I come from that place of the more we understand how we play our inner game of leadership, and you're right, that's going to be different for every single leader, but the more we understand how we do that ourselves, the better and the more impact we're going to have on our outer game results. Because it's all about how we interact with those results, right? Whether it's building a team, creating a strategy, or delivering. So in terms of a typical process, that book was my COVID response. I had a lot of leaders at the time going, how do I do this leadership thing now that I'm not in the same building as my people? And so that book effectively would be my coaching process from woe to go, but it never works out that way. That's not how we do it in real life. When I'm working with someone, we'll always have a plan. We always have a plan. We're always very clear on the outcome that we're trying to achieve. That's really important. But at the beginning of every session, I will ask the person I'm working with, you know, what's going on for you today? You know, what would be the best outcome for you today? Because if you've just had a team member have a major meltdown, or if all of a sudden this new project's come in, me talking to you about the thing we had scheduled is not really going to work.
No, it's perfect timing to deal with those issues in hand.
Yeah.
But that also would make your role quite exciting because you don't know what you're coming to every day.
Yeah.
Do you have some success stories or those moments where you've walked out of a session going, that it really worked today, it really made a difference?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. What triggers that for you? What's that moment versus a good session versus, that was brilliant?
Yeah. So at the end of every session, I'm going to ask someone, you know, what insights have you had today? What's stuck with you? What's in your mind right now from what we've talked about over the last hour, however long it is? You know, what have they found has been of most value? And then, of course, what are you going to do? Because it's great that we've had this time together, but what are you actually going to do? So for me, I can often see it. It's a physical thing when someone gets it or when they've had the light bulb moment. So I can often feel that in a session. And then it's following up afterwards and, you know, they might reach out to me or I'll be following up with them and they've gone away and tried the experiment that we set or that they identified. Yeah. They've given it a go and they've had some wins. Or they've even, you know, figured out what doesn't work for them.
Mm.
So it's those types of things, you know, and particularly where a leader thought that it was going to be really hard and that they couldn't do it.
Do you balance, or how do you balance, I guess, driving a conversation when you're coaching versus perhaps just asking those key questions to let them drive it? Is, 'cause that a bit of a fine line? 'Cause I guess, I mean, I've seen different coaches in different situations, and, you know, sometimes a coach perhaps is given a lot of information.
Mm.
Others ask those good questions to make you do it. But then sometimes you don't want to walk out going, I've just paid for someone to ask me 20 questions. Mm. You know, like, where do you find that fine line?
Yeah, yeah, that's a really good question. And I think sometimes we can get too attached to the labels. So the label of a coach or the label of a mentor or whatever it is. At the end of the day, I'm there to, which comes back to that list of things that you read off at the beginning,
yeah,
the things that, you know, it looks like I do a lot of things. But what that means is when I'm working with someone, I could be in a coaching session, but we might need to have a training moment where I'm introducing them to a new framework or a tool or something like that. And so we flip around depending on what the person needs. At the end of the day, that's the most important thing, that they get what they need out of that session. And the next most important thing, equally important thing, is that it's something that they can go away and do something with. I don't really want to just sit there and talk for an hour. You know, I want there to be some really practical shifts that happen post-conversation.
What would be your sort of, if you were writing the infomercial for your coaching, you know, what would you say are the key benefits for a leader to be coached versus perhaps just talking to colleagues at work? And second part to that question, is it good for new leaders and experience? Like, it should be everybody in that mix?
Yeah, I'll answer the second bit first. Yes, it's useful for everybody. And yes, I'm completely biased. but I think, you know, at the end of the day, if we look at a lot of professional, whether it's sports people or, you know, largely sports people is a good field to look at. They all have coaches. And they don't just have one. They have coaches for everything, right? And we are seeing a subtle shift in business around that. But I believe that for most people, emerging leaders, yes, they need to build their toolkit. So doing training courses and gathering those tools can be really, really useful. The more senior you get, it's not so much what you do, it's the way you do it. And so, you know, I use a lot of diagnostics and things like that in my practice where we cut through it all and we get to really what could be contributing to what's going on. So, you know, we have emerging leaders that need kind of both, and with senior execs, it's a bit of understanding, again, how they're playing their inner game and how that's impacting on the results that they're getting.
That senior leadership too can sometimes be quite a lonely journey. So having a coach that's external, you're not, you know, giving away trade secrets or mentioning anybody you shouldn't mention, it gives you that neutral ground to actually have a conversation that perhaps at a senior level, there isn't anyone high enough for you to go and have a conversation with. I imagine it fills that need as well.
Absolutely. It fills that need. And it also fills the need of, you know, unintentionally, I think we often set our leaders up to fail. And I do say we do that unintentionally, right? What often happens is, you know, someone will go into a leadership position. We'll go, here's your team. You're going to be amazing. We'll give them a pat on the back and off they go. And that often leads to this thought process in leaders that they have to have all the answers. And, you know, we keep saying how great they are and how they'll figure it out and all this kind of stuff. And so we're sort of taking them to that place where they feel they need to know the answers or they should know the answers, and maybe they're afraid to ask for help or to say, I don't know this. Now, it depends on the culture of the organisation, right, as to how we define leadership. And whether, you know, I don't believe in failure. It's all just a learning opportunity. If it didn't work this time, we're going to try something different next time. So it's sort of setting people up so that they can be successful. And everyone is going to be different. Everyone's needs are going to be different. You know, there's a lot of statistics out there, and I'm a trainer, so, you know, I'm probably shooting myself in the foot here, but there's a lot of statistics out there that tell us that, you know, classroom training on its own, which I don't do, by the way, but classroom training on its own very rarely transfers into the workplace.
Yeah.
People really struggle from going from that controlled environment now and back into the workplace with all the pressures that were there before they left, and now they've got to try and do this new stuff as well. You know, it's often difficult for them to actually figure out how to fit that in, and the to-do list has just got longer.
Yeah, totally. Coaching's far more vibrant and responsive to the current need, where a lot of facilitated courses or online training, etc., it's very generic, because it has to be, because it doesn't know who's going to be hitting play on that button.
Yeah, and I
love that about coaching, that it can be so specific. Have you got sort of favourite coaching stories like that, that successful moment or favourite story or perhaps worst examples? What is it that always plays in your head?
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking of a particular leader at the moment who's sort of responsible for New Zealand and their organisation, and they stepped up into that role. It was a succession plan.
Right.
And, you know, I think what's happened over time is we overcomplicate things. We think because we're moving up in an organisation that the leadership has just got more difficult. And so I spend a lot of my time sort of bringing it back to the practical simplicities. Leaders already have enough going on in their world without me going and making it more complicated for them. That's not my job, shouldn't be my job. So this particular leader, I remember in our very first session coming away, they had a specific thing that they wanted to be able to do differently. So I shared some tools and we had some conversation around that and how, you know, they could make this work. And at the end of it, when we were having those reflective questions, they said to me, "Oh my gosh, I didn't realize, man, I've been making this really complicated. That is so practical, and I can see how that could work." So I think that's always one of the things for people to just be mindful of. Doesn't matter what you're looking at in the leadership space. If someone's trying to make it way more complicated than it needs to be, just be alert to that. Because I don't think it has to be.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's turn now to your book, Navigate Your Impact, How to Achieve Goals That Really Matter. This is your second book. What made you decide that you needed to put pen to paper on this one?
Now, that's interesting, because it wasn't the book that I was writing. I was actually writing another book, and then just with some life circumstances, I decided, actually, the passion book in me right now is this one, Navigate Your Impact.
Okay.
So the old one went to one side and I started working on this. And I guess one of the things that I've always, you know, again, with my anything is possible kind of belief, that for us to be able to achieve the things that really matter to us in life, we need to be able to do a few things. First of all, we need to get clear on what those things are. And then we really need to have a process, a way of questioning ourselves. Are we really committed and are we really connected to this goal? Or do we just think it's a nice idea, right? And so the book effectively is a decision-making process. That's what it is. It's a way for you to go through, do some analysis around where you're currently at in terms of those finite resources, time, energy, money, focus, those things. Where are you spending those right now? And what is it that you really want in the future? And what does that require? And what's the gap? You know, and kind of going through this idea of sometimes we may have a worthy goal, a very worthy goal, but we're just not in the right life season for that goal to take place. A good example of that is that for me, back in 2010, I watched the movie The Way with Martin Sheen, a brilliant movie about the Camino in Spain. And I thought, man, that would be an amazing thing to do. But in 2010, I had two kids under the age of 10. I had the big corporate job, and it was like, where am I going to find time to go and wander around Spain for a couple of months, you know? So I just put it to the side. So knowing that maybe there might come a time where it's the right time, it's the right life season for that to happen. So I've only just been back.
Brilliant.
5 or 6 weeks, yeah. 2 months, my partner and I, we walked across all of Spain, nearly 1,100 kilometres in 48 days.
Wow.
So, you know, but it was just because I got to that place. Yep. And I think a lot of us.
But didn't mean you couldn't have the goal in the first place.
No.
It's just been realistic about when that goal might be fulfilled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. Sometimes I'm working with leaders and they go, oh, you know, I want to do an ultra marathon or something like that. And we, you know, we unpack and have a bit more of a conversation. And they've got 3 kids under 5 and they've already got the big job. And they're not even getting to the gym. So it's like, really? Let's have a chat about this.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, what's realistic for now? And let's not lose that goal. Because I think, you know, if that's something that motivates someone.
But could a goal now just be getting to the gym once or twice a week and looking at your life schedule to make that fit in?
Make that fit in. So sometimes we just want to try and, you know, do too much.
Who do you think you've aimed this book at? Who should pick this up off the shelf?
I use the term leadership very holistically. So you don't have to lead a team to be a leader. We're all leaders of ourselves. So the book is aimed at anyone who is a little bit frustrated with not having been able to achieve those goals that are really important to them. Or they just struggle to even identify what they might be. You know, I think in the busyness of life, we don't get the time to think and dream. We kind of maybe feel it's a little self-indulgent or we're being a bit selfish if we do that. But actually, that's where our ideas come from.
Yeah, so how important is it to set those goals? How important is it to have goals and be able to articulate them?
Yes, yes. And then to be able to go through that decision-making process around, is that a goal for now? Or is that something I will revisit in another life season? And feeling okay with that. I think sometimes what we find is people will identify a goal, unfortunately, often on New Year's. I'm not a fan of New Year's resolutions. And, you know, and then within 2 weeks, they've already fallen off the wagon. But they identify goals then and don't really commit to following through in either the decision-making process, really unpacking what that will involve to achieve that. Am I really prepared to make this thing a priority? And if I am, what does that mean for the rest of my life? Because you can't focus more on career without it impacting another part of your life. So I talk in the book about, you know, I represent a life plan as a circle, because I call it a pizza. Because imagine you're going to take a slice of your pizza, which is your career. Now, if I make that bigger, I still have the same amount of pizza, so I've got to make some decisions around, you know, how that priority is going to impact other things. And am I okay with that? You know, does that make sense for now or not? Instead of beating myself up because I haven't achieved the thing.
Yeah. And then remembering to celebrate. I don't think as Kiwis we're good at celebrating ourselves or celebrating that you've reached a goal that might have been just something that you'd set yourself.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
So important.
There's a great book by Dr. Benjamin Hardy and Dan Sullivan, I think it is, called The Gap and the Gain. And this is the exact thing they talk about. You know, do we celebrate the gains? Do we stop and actually go, well, this is what I said I was going to do this week. What have we actually achieved, you know? And, hey, how amazing is that? And there's lots of ways to do that without it feeling icky, right? I think I'm a great journaler. There's so much value in journaling. And, you know, the second question I ask myself every day is, what were my wins from yesterday? You know, what when I look back on yesterday, am I pretty proud of, actually? I thought it went pretty well. Before I get on to what's my focus for today. And I think we're so tuned in to jumping to the what else can I add to this to-do list, that we kind of, we lose sight of what we've already done, where we've come from. And that's really important.
Mm. I had a lovely manager once that used to literally make us, as we got to our front door, at the end of the day, before you put the key in the door, text me two things you're proud of from today. And you can't open the door till you've done it. And then when you open your door, just focus on your family.
Yeah,
and
nice.
It was really nice. And it was kind of that switch off moment. Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah.
Can I talk a little bit personally now? You dedicate your book to your late dad, who I understand passed away as you were writing this. What inspiration did he bring into your world and book, and how has that kind of infiltrated its way into navigating your impact?
Yeah. So actually, that was one of the life events. It was my dad passing away that switched me from the book I was writing to this one. And my dad had a huge influence over I guess my professional career. He was the one that I looked at that he just always seemed to be able to achieve stuff. You know, and I didn't really understand how he did that, but I did try to sort of copy him.
Mm.
And learnt a lot along the way, because there were things that I thought he did that he absolutely didn't do. And so, you know, he was always there, I guess, as that role model for me, around someone who really did demonstrate that if you put your mind to it, get clear, decide, and then be prepared to do the work, you can achieve anything you want. And so I guess that's where that's come from for me.
Yeah, that's lovely.
You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You've broken your book down into three parts. Can we just quickly overview each of the three? Firstly, the decision-making journey.
Mm.
What's your thoughts behind that?
Yeah, so I put that up front for all those people with the really long to-do list that don't have time to read the whole book. So, you know, the to-do list, it takes you through the steps. It's a recipe. It's a way of considering your goals, you know, to get clear on what they might be for the future. So that's what that process is. And it's laid out in that, you know, it's a stop-go sort of situation. So it helps you do that. The second bit that's around reviewing and taking action focuses on a couple of things that I am always somewhat staggered that people don't do, and that is people don't put time in their calendars to do their own goals.
Mm.
And if you're someone who's driven by your calendar, if it isn't in there, it's probably not going to get done, right? So that's simple things like even just getting the exercise in, whatever it might be, you know, setting meetings with yourself to actually do the work.
Mm.
You know, I often work with leaders who complain about other people, filling up their calendar. And I go, yeah, but have you blocked out the time?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Well, you know, maybe do that.
And feel okay to do that.
And feel okay to go back when someone tries to book over and say, I'm actually busy at that time. My calendar is up to date. Please feel free to go back and have another look and find a time slot that will work for both of us.
So what if you're listening to the show today and you're not a leader? Your role is different, but you've got someone that's perhaps setting those unrealistic expectations around goals or time pressures. How does someone safely speak up to their leader?
Mm, yeah. And look, that's going to vary for different people, because it comes back to the quality of the relationship, doesn't it? I mean, you know, again, like I was saying right at the beginning, for leaders to spend time getting to know their people.
Yeah.
If a leader hasn't done that, it makes it really hard for a team member now to coach upwards and kind of have those conversations. It can be done, though. And I think it's just about, you know, again, approaching the conversation not from a place of defensiveness, but actually going to a leader and saying, hey, look, you know, I know these are the projects I've got on at the moment. You've asked me about these couple. You'd like to get these underway. I'm more than happy to do that. But where do I find the time to do that? What would you like me to deprioritize in order to be able to do those things? I just need some help with what the priorities should be. And
a good leader's got to listen.
Yes.
What did you say? Ask more, tell less. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I think if someone's been brave enough to have that conversation, I'm really hoping the leader's going to listen and tune into that.
Nice. Part two looks at action and impact.
Mm-hmm.
Talk us through that.
Okay, so action, write it down. Mm-hmm. You got to write it down. You got to map it out. You got to schedule it. You got to get it in your calendar. The review piece for impact is around, yeah, celebrating the wins. And then identifying what you're going to tackle next. And it sounds so basic, doesn't it, when I say this? But it's amazing how we don't always put it into action. Really, by the time you've gone through the decision-making process around, am I going to do this goal now or not, your action piece is a to-do list, pretty much. Just make it happen, get it into your calendar, schedule it, review it. Have meetings with yourself.
Yeah, I like that. Put your own meeting dates in. Take yourself out for coffee. Part three covers the overarching concepts and focus on our brain. Mm. And I love the head, the heart, or the gut brain discussion in there. Talk us through that.
Yeah, so we call this MBIT, which stands for, this is going to sound very fancy pants, but it stands for multiple brain integration techniques. So there's a lot of scientific research out there that we have multiple brains. And the three most well-known and researched and documented now is the head, heart and gut. Ooh. So head is the logical brain. Most of us are really familiar with our head brains. In fact, we spend maybe too much time in our head brains, but it's where we do our planning. It's where it's very quick moving. It's where our creativity will come from. The heart brain is to do with our values and our beliefs, and also how we relate to others, the emotions that sits in our heart brain. And our gut brain is it's where self-protection lies. It's where our identity resides. So I don't know if you've ever had the experience where maybe your head and your heart is saying, I really should do this thing. And your heart might be going, yeah, it feels right. You know, it lines up with my values and yep, I think that's okay. But you still haven't taken action. Mm. And often it's because there's either fear is residing down here. That's that self-protection thing. What are you fearful of? Or often it can be we're not quite ready to step into that version of ourselves yet. We don't truly believe that we can be the person who either achieves that thing or does that thing. So as a coach, it's sort of one of the accreditations that I hold. So I'm constantly calibrating when I'm coaching someone, looking at them, because their language, their physiology, all of those types of things will give me clues as to, is this a head, a heart, or a gut brain, or is it, you know, multiple, and how do we move forward? So going back to your question about how do you ask the right questions? For me, a lot of that comes from that calibration with people. You know, what is it that's really preventing them from moving forward?
Brilliant. Nearly out of time. Couple of quick fires. Can leaders hit reset, like through coaching? Can they sit back and look at their own style of leadership and completely change?
I believe they can, absolutely. They may need some help.
Yeah, nice.
Mm.
And you self-published this book and presumably your previous one.
Yep.
What was your biggest learning from self-publishing?
The biggest learning is always that the writing is actually the easy part. It's everything that comes after that is more challenging. But I like self-publishing. I like the freedom it gives me around content and distribution and those types of things.
Is there book number three on the way? Because you mentioned the old book that you pushed to one side when your life events happened. Is that still in a drawer yelling, Deb, don't forget me?
Yeah, well, there is that. But there's also now, you know, lessons from the Camino going, Deb, over that side. So
we've run out of time. I want to ask about that trip. You'll have to come back and fill us in. How can people get in touch with you and get your books or grab you as a coach?
Yeah, best way to get hold of me is through my website, which is www.deb-bailey.com.
Brilliant. And we didn't touch base on the facilitation, but that you're available for sort of that corporate setting, not just an individual.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. As well as coming to speak at different events.
Yeah. Meet wonderful people like you.
Fantastic. Look, we ran out of time, which is always the best sign of an interview. Really enjoyed talking to you today. Go and track the book down, Navigate Your Impact. We'll have all the details up on our social media throughout the week. Thank you so much for chatting tonight.
Thank you, Stephen. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great week, everybody. If you are driving home, stay safe. IKEA is opening this week. Good luck on the motorways. Have a fabulous week. We'll catch you next Monday. Take care.